We all have a bit of the trickster in us. Even if you've never played a practical joke on someone, you've probably laughed at a few. But pranks aren't just for April Fool's Day. They can be powerful vehicles for political and social change. Kembru McLeod is a performance artist who pulls politically charged pranks. He's also a professor at the University of Iowa, and he's just come out with A History of Pranking, which goes all the way back to one of America's founding fathers, Ben Franklin.
Over the course of his life, he used over 100 different pseudonyms that he would use for satirical op-ed pieces. In fact, soon before he died, I think about a month or so before he died, he pulled what I considered probably the best prank of his life, in which he was satirizing and critiquing the biblical justifications used to uphold slavery. And so he wrote a satirical editorial about how Muslims should enslave Christians because European Christians are the real savages. That's an example of using mass media, the major medium of its time, the newspapers, to stir up a public debate about something that was very important.
So you're basically interested in pranks that have some social or political value, that are kind of like satirical performance art.
Yeah. A good prank is one that uses media to stir up a public conversation about important social issues, as opposed to a hoax, which is a publicity stunt, or even a con, where the point is to use deception to take people's money or possessions or whatever. And so, yeah, I'm most interested in thinking about how pranks can be used to make people sharper critical thinkers.
Well, there's such a long history, especially in the 1960s, of pranks as a way of speaking truth to power. I mean, most famously, I guess, Ken Kesey and the Merry Pranksters.
Yeah, Ken Kesey, the author, he basically consolidated a group of people in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, that became known as the Merry Pranksters. And in many ways, they were kind of pranking reality. You know, for me, a prank basically turns the world askew, even if it's just for a moment. And when you do that, you can see the world from a new perspective. Mm. And so I think Ken Kesey and his Merry Pranksters, they were doing these essentially rolling performance art pieces in their road trip across America, where they painted school bus with a swirl of colors and tricked it out with amplification and tape loops and echo effects and so on, so that when they would roll through a small town in middle America with this weird bus and weird sounds coming from it, I sort of see that as a prank on reality.
But in that same era spawned, I'm thinking about some of the political things. Like, didn't Abbie Hoffman famously try to levitate the Pentagon?
Yeah, Abbie Hoffman and Paul Krassner, they actually applied for a permit to levitate the Pentagon 20 feet in the air. And they actually met with Pentagon officials and eventually agreed on a compromise, which was they could levitate it 3 feet in the air.
But what was the point of that?
The point of that was just, A, just to have fun, but B, they were using that as advertising for a big anti-war rally that was happening at the same time. So in other words, they were basically in a pre-internet age trying to make this meme go viral.
From that period, what do you think were some of the most politically effective pranks that were pulled?
I think one of my favorite, because it's so simple, was when Abbie Hoffman and other yuppies went to the New York Stock Exchange and dumped a big garbage bag full of dollar bills, I think about $300 or $400 worth, over the heads of the stock traders. It stopped trading for a few minutes. It stopped the ticker while these buttoned-down businessmen suddenly started diving for dollars. And what I think that prank did really nicely and effectively was that it sort of lifted the veil of respectability and showed the kind of naked greed that lay underneath the stock exchange. The interesting thing about pranks to me is that they're very performative, and they also it also kind of breaks down the barriers between actor and audience. So in this case, Abbie Hoffman basically turned this audience into performers when they dropped what they were doing and started grabbing cash on the ground because traders had never seen like the
money
floating
down
from the sky.
And so much more effective than just marching around the front of the stock exchange with placards.
Yeah, and they made sure that reporters also came along so that it would be reported on. Media is a key part of pranking, in my opinion.
The great ones kind of take on a life of their own. I mean, sometimes there are pranks that start, essentially they're rumors that then become urban legends. I mean, you trace the prank origins of, there was a famous urban legend that smoking banana peels can get you high.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing that just through word of mouth when I was in, you know, high school in the late 80s. But it started out essentially as a word of mouth prank amongst friends in the West Coast. The most likely culprits were the leaders of this hippie band, Country Joe and the Fish. And they started circulating just because they thought it would be funny, circulating this rumor amongst their friends that smoking banana peels would get you high. And then it eventually cropped up in underground newspapers in the early 1967. And then, just coincidentally, around the same time, Donovan had the hit Mellow Yellow.
Was that really about banana peels?
No, and it turns out that the song, I found when I did more research, the song was written way before that rumor started circulating. It was just this cosmic coincidence. And so so underground papers picked it up, and then fairly quickly, regional newspapers like the San Francisco Chronicle, and then Time and Newsweek and national media. And it was funny because there was a congressperson who responded in a very ironic way by introducing a bill called the Banana Enforcement Act of 1967, in which he read the speech on the floor of Congress. Anyway, the FDA actually responded very soberly with a press release after analyzing the chemical elements of banana peels and said that there were no hallucinogenic effects. But it just took on a life of its own. You know, it just kept circulating through word of mouth and off and on in mass media for years.
Who are your favorite pranksters?
I don't know. I have a lot of them. I think I have a soft spot for Alan and Jean Abel. They're this married couple that have been going at it for over 50 years. And in the late 50s, they created a fictitious society for indecency to naked animals, or CINNA.
What was it?
Yeah. It was an organization that advocated clothing naked animals because, you know, little children shouldn't be able to see animal genitalia. They were sending up 1950s American morality.
Conservative
they were satirizing
values.
It by claiming, yeah, you need to clothe your animals because we have genitalia surrounding us all the time, right?
I can't believe you didn't mention the Yes Men.
Oh, yeah, the Yes Men also. They're probably the best and my favorite contemporary pranksters. So, for instance, they created a fake website, a fake Dow Chemical website, that claimed that the Dow Chemical subsidiary Union Carbide, which famously, 25 years ago, accidentally leaked chemicals in India, killing a lot of people and causing lots of long-term damage to the environment as well as health risks.
This is a famous chemical leak in Bhopal.
Bhopal, yeah, in the early 1980s. And so the Yes Men decided to use the 20th anniversary of the Bhopal chemical spill to announce that Dow Chemical was selling off Union Carbide and using all the money generated from that sale to compensate victims. They were invited on BBC World News, where a quote-unquote Dow Chemical representative, who is actually a Yes Man, confirmed that, yes, Dow Chemical is selling off Union Carbide, and they apologizing for, you know, acquiring Union Carbide in the first place, and that they would compensate the victims. And basically,
so how did Dow react?
Well, Dow immediately sent out a press release saying that this is fake, but not before the Dow stock crashed by, I think, $2 billion or so. It eventually recovered. But that's an example of pranksters using mass media as a megaphone to amplify their criticisms of, in this case, corporations that engage in unethical behaviors.
How have pranks changed in the age of social media?
Well, I think it's allowed some pranks to go viral much more quickly than they had in previous years. So Jimmy Kimmel can post a YouTube video of a woman twerking and then catching herself on fire by falling over into a coffee table with a candle, and it goes viral almost immediately. And so, yeah, social media has allowed some kinds of pranks to circulate much more quickly. But the flip side of that also is that it also increases the speed at which pranks and hoaxes can be debunked, because there are plenty of blogs out there and websites out there like Snopes. And so, yeah, pranks can be revealed much more quickly.
So the prank is alive and well.
Yeah, it's not going away. We might have reached a saturation point, but they're not going to go quietly into history.
Kimbrough, thanks so much for talking.
Oh, thank you.
Kimbrough MacLeod is the author of Pranksters, Making Mischief in the Modern World.